Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico from the Leadership Enigma, and well, would you believe it, we are on location again. This time we are in the wonderful, and I'm glad to say, sunny New York City. In fact, we are at Spring Studios in Tribeca with a glorious background. And with me today, because I'm here at the invitation of this wonderful gentleman, I'm here with Giuseppe Stigliano, who is the global CEO of Spring Studios, which is where we are. And this is actually going to be the spot for the Wall Street Journal Future of Everything Festival, which, Giuseppe, you very kindly invited me to. Welcome to the Leadership Enigma.
Thank you so much, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to the Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. It doesn't get much better than this, does it? Let's be honest.
It's just perfect. Perfect weather, perfect sun, perfect sky, perfect temperature. It's just amazing. Let's say.
Well, you can see that we've both got smiles. We've both got shades on, so it doesn't get any better than this. Look, Giuseppe, firstly, thank you so much for the kind
pleasure.
Invitation to join you here, but also to talk to you before the festival kicks off tomorrow. And it's a huge amount of goings on here right now. But I haven't really done an introduction for you because there's lots of things that I know you and I want to talk about. So, Giuseppe, you didn't just become the global CEO of Spring Studios globally across all the sites. Tell us a little bit about your journey to leadership.
Wow, what a question.
I know, that's too open, isn't it? But you know what, let's start there.
I'm Italian, obviously. I was born and raised in the south of Italy, moved to Milan because I wanted to study marketing.
Yep.
And that was the only chance for me,
moving
to Milan. I spent the following 5-6 years in Milan. Then I moved to France for a while. I moved to Spain. I moved to New York. I moved to Washington, D.C. Moved to London, spent time in different offices. And I started running my own company. At some point, my own company got the interest of a big holding.
Yep.
We sold the company and I started my career as an entrepreneur and I became a manager. Of course, I was scared. Of course, I was like, oh my God, they are going to give me a badge. I need to work from 9 to 5. I'm not used to it. What's going to happen? But then it didn't really happen.
Yeah.
They let me be the entrepreneur, if you want, the entrepreneur in-house. And I learned a lot, spent 10 years with WPP, so the largest marketing and communication holding in the world. And then at some point, I got this call from Spring Studios. During COVID, basically, I was running J. Walter Thompson at the time. After the merger, Wunderman Thompson. So
right.
We merged with Wunderman.
Yep.
And so that was my second leadership role. Prior to that, I was an executive director Europe at AKQA.
Saw that, yep.
Prior to that, I ran this EMEA team for WPP, dedicated to FCA, so automotive. And so a bunch of leadership roles, growing responsibilities. I was the CEO of J. Walter Thompson in Italy. You know, of course, the University of Advertising, the oldest advertising agency in the world. And when Spring Studios shareholders called me, I was like, of course, let's try. So I moved back to London, let's say between London and New York, and I just accepted the role.
I do love the fact that we have got the sounds of the city going on behind
the
us.
Real thing.
And you said, oh, is that okay? And I was like, it makes it very authentic. It really does. We are really in New York. Just help everybody understand a little bit about what is Spring Studio, because we're here at a massive site in Tribeca. We're on the rooftop right now. There's three floors below us. Just help everyone, because you're multiple sites, London, Milan.
Correct. LA and of course, New York. So the idea of Spring Studios back in the day, 25 years ago,
yep.
was to merge production capabilities with agency capabilities. So if you want, you can either consider Spring like an advertising agency with in-house production capabilities or the other way around.
Right.
If you stick to the, let's say, the roots of the company, production house, so studios, and then an agency. Then when they decided to open the New York office, so they just had the opportunity to take this this facility, this building, and the idea was, why don't we also host events and produce events? And at that point, it was like, oh, why don't we also do a members club? So New York is probably the quintessential sort of representation of what Spring stands for. And it's a members club, studios for shoots and production, and big events, and an advertising agency, everything under one roof, which is quite unique and allows us to be a 360-degree advertising agency for our clients.
Yep.
The core business is typically been around fashion, beauty, luxury, lifestyle. But of course, when it comes to events, we tend to host any kind of event, including, of course, the Wall Street Journal Future of Everything, which is a big event that we've been hosting for the last few years.
And I'm very kindly, I'm gonna tag onto your coattails for a couple of days at that event too, and we'll see who we meet, which will be great as well. Listen, I didn't quite know, how do I understand you at the moment, because you're the global CEO at the moment, but I know you're an entrepreneur. You're an entrepreneur by background. You use the phrase entrepreneur as well. And you're an author, you're keynote speaking. So do you consider yourself someone with a mixed portfolio now because of your experience? Or tell us a little bit about kind of how do you see yourself now?
I actually like a lot the concept of a portfolio career.
I don't
see myself in one role, although, of course, this is my full-time job and it takes a lot of my time. But I also hold a PhD in marketing and economics, so I've always been teaching. I teach at UCL School of Management in London, but also in Milan, a couple of universities.
Well, you're a professor as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm not a junk professor. This blend...
There's a lot of lot of titles for you right now.
Yeah, you know what? The fact that I've always been this hybrid between the practitioner and the academic led me to many opportunities. Let's say at some point they asked me to give a talk, and then another one, and then I got used to it and I liked it a lot, so I decided to double down on it and I hired a coach because I wanted to be good, and probably I became decent. And at some point they asked me to give a talk, and Philip Kotler, the father of marketing, was in the room. Now you can imagine, I hold a PhD in marketing and economics. My background is in marketing. I was running a marketing, and I'm running a marketing company. So when they told me, well, you're allowed to give a talk, and by the way, the father of marketing is in the room.
No pressure.
No pressure, exactly. I was like, okay, I can do that. I did it. It went well. And then I ended up spending some time with Philip Kotler. And at the end of a long conversation, he was like, you should write a book. Well, I have no idea what you mean. Why should I? And he said, because you are this interesting blend of an academic, but also a practitioner, and your approach is quite fresh, quite different. There is not such a book out there. You should try to blend the two worlds. And if I like the book, I'll write the foreword for you. That was a great...
That's a pretty good offer, isn't it?
The guy sold 80 million copies. So my commercial side was like... I was starting making some mud, right? And at the end, well, actually, half of the book, we started this back and forth of chapters, and he was sending me his comments, and probably 50, 60% of the book was there.
Yeah.
He said, I really like the book. I'll be your co-author. So basically, from maybe I'll write the foreword for you, we got to, let's put both names on the corner.
I was going to say, it's co-authored, isn't it, the book?
And that was literally changed my life, because as you can imagine, he's now 93.
Yep.
43 is 93. So, of course, he doesn't travel a lot. And this is we recently published our third book together. And book after book, my, let's say, speaker's career took off, because, of course, Phil is not traveling that much anymore. And every time that somebody reaches out and says, why don't you guys come and give a talk?
It's going
to
be you.
He's kindly enough to put me in copy and say, you should invite my
So that's an amazing opportunity that came your way.
Absolutely.
Do you see that as luck, positioning?
Bit of both. You know, I don't believe in luck or bad luck. I believe in math and statistics. So, you know, the more you plant seeds and you meet with people and you have conversations and you explore opportunities, the more you increase the possibilities of success and failure, or both if you want, right? It's all about the way you read it, the way you consider it. And if it's just a building block towards the next chapter of your life and career, then it's just another chapter.
So with everything you're doing and the book that you've written, are people coming to you really as a specialist in retail and marketing, or do they separate it in some ways? I'll come back to leadership, but do they see the two together?
It's an amazing question. The reality is that the main reason why we have decided to keep using the word retail in the books is because we believe that it's an interesting niche. And the reason being is that retail has changed a lot in the last few years. Just to give an example, retail is historically about B2C, so business to consumer. Fair enough. However, today, a B2B player can bypass all the intermediaries and just sell to directly to the consumer. So it's no longer about B2B, B2C, considering that many B2B players can just do it. You can sell your vintage, whatever, leather jackets to another customer. So in that case, we are talking about C2C, so customer to customer, consumer to consumer. And you're competing with retailers. And this has been allowed by the digital transformation. So what is retail today? And what about the point of sale? Is that the right name, considering that perhaps the transaction is not happening there anymore? Maybe people are going there, showrooming, and then buying somewhere else. So the whole infrastructure, if you want, of retail has changed dramatically in the last few years. And so we have decided to focus on that. Having said that, the same happened to marketing. If you want, marketing is about product, price, place, and promotion. And all the levers, the four levers, change a lot because the product, you can design the product based on data. And so marketing is shifting from making people want things to making things people want, right? You can just infer from data what people are likely desiring and wanting, and you can just reverse engineer the process. And when it comes to pricing, you can use technology and do dynamic pricing and adapt the price to the demand. And when it comes to the distribution channels, you know, you can sell whatever you want whenever you want it. And promotion, you can do hyper targeting messages and promotions, personalization, and so on and so forth. So it's just another word for both marketing and retail specifically.
And you mentioned another term there, which is on all leaders' lips, and that's digital transformation. Yeah. Is the high street dead?
That's a great question. No. However, unless you give people a very good reason to leave their sofa and go to a store, they will buy online. So the point is, we call it being a destination.
Right.
Meaning, either you turn your brick and mortar store into a want-to-go place instead of a have-to-go place, or people would rather opt for the more convenient option.
Yeah.
And then again, of course, if they want to buy some milk and they're running late and there is a mom-and-pop store across the street, they would go. But it's something they have to do instead of something they want to do. And that's not exactly the best way to survive and thrive.
I know you shuttle backwards and forwards between London and New York.
Yeah.
And we really have got the sounds of New York above us, behind us.
Now we have a helicopter as well.
What is the what are some of the biggest shifts that you're seeing on the streets of London, the streets of New York, from a retail perspective?
Yeah, I guess they are all adapting to this new hybrid, digital world. Actually, they've been trying to adapt.
Right.
Struggling in some cases, thriving in other cases,
surviving,
merely surviving in other cases. And what's becoming even more interesting is that the digital, so physical and digital, is now becoming a three-dimensional.
It's another new word, isn't it?
Yeah, it's coming, it's coming. You know, I'm a marketer. So it's no longer physical and digital, so digital. It's becoming three-dimensional. So it's physical, digital, and virtual. So imagine, 2 months ago, my son, Carlo, he's 8 years old. He asked me, hey, can you please buy me a BMW? Like, Carlo, that's a very big ask. What are you talking about? No, it's just $8. I'm like, okay, I'm a digital immigrant. So if you tell me that you want a BMW and it's $8, I think of one of the small...
Corgi cars. I'm showing my
I was like, yeah, let's go to the toy store and see what they have.
Yes.
Said, no. It's for my avatar. I'm talking about Fortnite.
In the virtual world.
And there is a dealership there, and I want to buy for my avatar a BMW. And by the way, they also sell Moncler jackets and Ralph Lauren polo shirts. So you can just deal with a bunch of brands in a virtual world, and we're talking about an 80-year-old customer,
right,
with zero experience with that brand, let's say BMW, in the physical world, zero experience in the digital world, and one experience, like the first experience, in the shape of an avatar in a virtual world. What is the next best action to retarget this customer? How do you grow? How do you nurture the relationship with this prospective customer? Or even a potentially a customer, like not a customer, but yeah, he can influence his dad when the time comes to buy the next car. So what is this 3D customer journey about? How do we manage this 3D customer journey? A bunch of new questions.
It sounds incredibly
no answers,
complex.
It's very complex.
And as you're describing that, I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm confused already, but I am a customer. So
correct.
I'm probably have experience of two, maybe not that much on the third one. But the reality is it's sounding more science than art now, because I'm assuming there's a huge amount of data being thrown out from all of these.
Yeah.
How does anyone in retail, going into retail, wanting to thrive, a leader in retail, how do they go about even taking on this challenge?
Yeah, you know, you're right. It's more science than art. In fact, someone said a few years ago that Mad Men, so Madison Avenue, Mad Men used to be, you know,
I remember
you
it well.
Refer to advertising people as Mad Men, right?
Yep.
And they said that Mad Men were turning into math men, right? Mathematics.
Right.
Because it's
the
more
data.
About data than science. And it's actually true. Having said that, once you have the same technology and the holy grail of marketers has always been the right message to the right person at the right time, which is hyper-targeting. And the more you have data, the more you can turn data into information, the more you can do that. Having said that, yep, once we all have the same technology,
right,
it goes back to the content, right? The creativity and perhaps the human ingenuity and the ability of humans to emotionally connect. That was the case until a few months ago. Now we have Gen AI.
Right.
Gen AI is the first time in human history in which a non-human agent can create. That's new. We've been using technology to amplify, distribute, store human ideas. Now it's different.
Right.
Now it can create. It's competing with us. This is the first time ever.
And when you say create, what are you referring to when you use that term?
You know, I'm quite skeptical when I hear people saying, yeah, this is not creating. It's just mixing a bunch of things that are already existing, which is exactly what creativity is about,
yeah, sure,
right? Even human
doesn't
beings.
Have to. Everything doesn't have to be new, does it?
Nothing is new. Frankly speaking, you know, think of you every time that you come up with an idea, that is the result of a number of combinations of experiences and stories that you've heard and things that you've seen. And you know, it's just the way it is. So creativity is the combination of existing, let's say, elements in a potentially new way,
yes,
which is exactly what ChatGPT does. Then, if we want to say that it's more mechanic, it's less sympathetic, yeah, I mean, let's talk about it. But
yes,
again, I'm quite skeptical when they just say, you know, it's just a means to an end, it's just a tool, it's just mixing something that is already out there created by humans. True, but I don't see this as so different from human beings, from
right,
what human beings do. Except for the, let's say, emotional connection, empathy, all those things that are still human because they're about chemistry.
That's the piece that I keep coming back to, because Gen AI is here and it will continue to exponentially grow in its capabilities. But that then gives us more time to do the human bits. So what are your thoughts in relation to that? You talk empathy, the curiosity, the human connection piece. It can't do that. Where does that still sit in our world, especially in what we've just been talking about, especially, you know, mass retail, high street retail, marketing, digital transformation? What are your thoughts in relation to that?
It's hard to predict. If you ask someone with, like, I remember I did this panel with someone from OpenAI.
Yeah.
And when he got this question, he said, you know, we just need to be ready for a future in which we will have plenty of time to be human.
See, I love that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's an amazing dream, and I can't wait to delegate all the boring stuff.
We can do things like this.
Yeah, let's
two
exactly.
people having a conversation.
Exactly.
The AI will edit it.
Yeah, exactly. Let's edit it, and let's focus on the nice conversation and the chemistry between two humans. I'd love to do that as much as I can. And also, we have a dog other than...
I know, everyone's thinking, what are they looking at? And that's because there are dogs walking around, there are people coming in and out.
It's real life.
We really are having that New York experience.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, going back to the question, I can't wait for the day we will be able to delegate a lot of the boring stuff to technology and to focus on, you know, Latins used to call it otium, which is basically when you don't do negotium, which is basically... you know, business, right? So every time that you're not doing business, you are doing something for yourself, for your fellow humans, for your family, for your friends, which is just good and what humans should do. So let's hope for a future in which we will be able to focus on value-added sort of tasks, or even just travel the world. And it's a bit, sounds like a dream. It's a bit utopic. Having said that, I do believe that in the next few years, there will be a lot of productivity that we will just unlock thanks to AI. And it's our responsibility today to give AI freedom within the boundaries.
Yes.
To build a regulatory framework so that in a few years, we will get the most out of this super powerful technology, and again delegate to this technology as much as we want, so that it doesn't hurt us and it doesn't create problems in the future. It's our responsibility today.
So it sounds like we're going to get more time back, but let's be discerning in relation to where we spend that time. Now, whilst I've got you, I want to go on to the topic of marketing. Every single business, whether it's a one or two people business, whether it's a larger business like this, whether it's a monolithic global business, everyone has got to market. What are some of the shifts or trends that you're seeing at the moment in relation to marketing and how people can reach other people to let them know who they are and what they're doing?
Yeah, marketing, if you think of the roots of the word, means to market, right? And so, of course, everybody needs it, especially in the privileged part of the world, because, you know, supply exceeds demand by far. So you need to find a way to convince people to choose
to stand out
and among a number of very similar equivalent alternative products, right? Or services or experiences. So of course we need marketing. And at the same time, marketing has been seen all about making people want things, as I was saying before. While today, with all the data that we have the opportunity to flip it and to turn it into making things people want. So instead of being pushy and instead of having companies waking up in the morning and say, what else can we make and sell? We have the opportunity to do the other way around. What else can we do for the customer?
That's a much more customer-centric approach, isn't it?
It's been like this for a while, but now we can walk the talk. Let's put it this way. Because not only we have the data, we have the computational power to analyze and process and turn data into information and make it actionable. So I feel like now it's time to walk the talk. And at the same time, the democratization of technology, and GenAI can play a role, can allow even mom and pop stores to leverage the power of
technology. They can be global. They can go global
absolutely.
Overnight.
Global niches. You know, you can sell something very niche. Yep. Maybe you're a small producer in the middle of nowhere and sell it to a number of global niches. Or you can just, as you've said, be a small shop in the whatever heart of London and just sell whatever you do everywhere in the world. It's a great opportunity.
Yep.
At the same time, sadly, it's easier said than done for a number of reasons. But again, I'm a big fan of this idea that, you know, if you look at ChatGPT, right? My mom, she is now 74. She's using ChatGPT for recipes, but also for suggestions when it comes to tell a story to my kids.
Right.
And so, you know, this is the proof that
I love
it's
it.
So, yeah, at some point she got to the point where she said, we don't need grandmas anymore. You can just use ChatGPT.
We always need grandmas.
And that was exactly my answer.
There's the Italian. We always need always. Grandmas. Can we just make that clear?
But yeah, I mean, I strongly believe there is a great opportunity for everybody in the world to access this cheap, accessible technology. We still need to figure out the environmental impact, which is often neglected.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's a great opportunity.
Okay. Let me come on to the subject of leadership.
Yep.
So you're in the global CEO role at the moment. What kind of leader have you become?
So I think I've been transitioning.
Okay. We're all work in progress, Giuseppe, I'll
which
add that
good.
To it.
Which is good.
Well,
which
and
is good.
Inevitable and, you know, essential.
On the one hand, I've never been a command and control leader.
Yeah.
At the same time, I've been a big believer of this idea that in today's world, considering that, let's say, the next generation of employees that we are now sort of, we should be servant leaders. But the more I go through life and career and what I do, the more I realize that there is no one size fits all. If you are in the middle of a turnaround, in, you know, probably a more authoritative leadership style is appropriate. If you are a startup and you've just fundraised and you need to make sure you deploy that money in the right way and you deliver against expectations and you meet the target, you probably need someone to tell everyone exactly what he or she
follow
expects and follow. You know, the cases, maybe you are in a sustained success mode or in growth mode. Maybe you're a scale-up and you need to build enthusiasm and you need to delegate, then a servant leadership style is more appropriate and so on and so forth. So again, there is no one-size-fits-all. What I've become is probably a more mature, let's put it this way, leader with more conscience and self-aware. And so I probably know way better than in the past that I can be a good leader in some circumstances and some sort of stages, and I'm definitely not a good leader in others. So, you know, in the future, my next endeavors, I'll make sure I double down on what I'm very good at and I discern what I'm, you know, I just simply...
And then you find good people who can...
Yeah, it's just a matter of a match, and then you just find good people to delegate.
So what I'm hearing as well is that there's not a cookie cutter approach to this, that actually you may have to deploy different styles of leadership depending on the context, the organization, where they are in their strategic planning. You can still be authentic to you though, can't you, Giuseppe?
Absolutely.
You just may need to
you have to
focus on a slightly different style because of what is needed. Is that a fair summary of
absolutely yes. That's okay. Exactly what it is. In a it's very important what you've added before. You need to surround yourself with people where complementary. So especially if you are a good leader but not necessarily the best manager, meaning that when it comes to execute and to put in place what you have envisioned, maybe you need to make sure you have a very good COO or CFO or a bit of both, like a combination of both, to ensure that the execution is, you know, efficient, effective, and everything goes smoothly.
Well, you take hiring and finding the right people very seriously, don't you, personally?
Absolutely.
We were chatting, weren't we, as we were just coming up to the rooftop, and just tell me a little bit about, you know, why you personally have such an involvement with senior leadership hires.
So first, I do it, but I'm not very good at doing it. So okay. I always make sure at least another person, maybe the HR director, is with me. Because in many cases, I become very emotional.
Right.
And so if I click with someone, I just start thinking that I can just work and that is the perfect person.
To be fair, we were like this when we first met online. We said, yeah, let's meet up. Come to New York.
Yeah, but you
that's
know,
how it
when
happened.
You need to work together, like, you know, on a daily basis, you just need to make sure that on top, you also have that complementarity and that you know number of things. So first, I'm not that good, and I always make sure someone is with me. But I take it seriously because, you know, it's people that make agencies and companies, and you need that perfect blend of human beings to deliver magic. And I'm so convinced that this is the case. Having said that, the holy grail of management has always been ensuring that the output is more better than the input, right? And AI is over-promising in this regard, right?
Oh, I see,
you can just leverage AI. You don't need the same amount of people. So basically the input goes down and hypothetically the output goes exponentially high. So I think that even more that blend of people with complementary skills leveraging technology the right way will be crucial in the next few years.
Right. Spring Studio, when I came here for the first time in the area itself, it feels like a very arty place. Do you consider yourself to be in a kind of an arty background, or do you feel you're more of the retail leader? So,
well, in my case, I don't have a creative background, not an arty background. I'm a
business
guy. So
you're leading creatives, aren't you?
Correct.
So my question to you is, how do you lead people who know a lot more than you do?
I don't.
Tell me more.
There is no reason to hire smart people who are better than you and tell them what to do, right? So I just make sure that there is alignment in terms of vision. I just make sure that they are the right people to lead the team that is probably core to the company, especially if you run an advertising agency or a creative shop. And so that there is a good fit and they're not perceived as a top down, you know, the leadership style, let's put it this way. The leadership style should be aligned. The way they lead should be aligned, but how they do it and how they get to the outcome or the output, it's not my business.
So you're just really steering the ship, aren't you?
I am.
In many ways, but you're giving these people all of the trust and the autonomy, and they are fully empowered to do what it is that you hired them for, because they know better than you.
In my case, frankly speaking, first, I do believe that they're better than me, so there is no reason why I should sort of decide what they should do. At the same time, being a big believer of this portfolio career, there would be no way for me to do what I do, including, you know, teaching and writing and giving talks, unless I delegate a lot. You know what I mean? So I do love the idea that I can, you know, trust the people I'm surrounded, you know, and I select and I hire, but at the same time, it's a necessity. I've built my career on this.
So if you had to give it a headline, how would you headline your role as the global? You're not just the CEO of here, where we are, the facility in New York. You're the global CEO.
Correct.
How would you headline then your role or your remit as the global CEO?
I think it's...
And I love the fact you're pausing as well. This is good.
Yeah, I need to think
it means these
about
are good
it.
Questions.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Well, again, I think my job is to create the conditions for my general managers to thrive.
Right.
That's my job. Create the conditions for them to succeed. I think that's good summary.
When we think about leaders in your life, is there a leader that sticks out for you that's had a big impact on you? Someone that you have had experience with where you learnt a lot, even maybe just by watching and observing them as a role model?
Yeah, actually, at the very beginning of my career, and this is something that I've been hearing from other people as well. So it means that, especially at the beginning of our career, as leaders, we have a big responsibility because we tend to influence and create that imprinting. So at the very beginning, I was here in New York. I was working for the Italian Tourist Board. So our office was at the Rockefeller Center. And I was like a 22-year-old, you know, trainee, whatever.
Right.
And I had an incredible leader. He was the general manager of the office. And for some reason, he thought I reminded him of himself back in the day. So he spent so much time with me. And I remember him coaching me on very basic things, like, let's go to that event And once we were there, he was like, look at that window. There is no way you can do an event in New York, like a five-star experience, in the middle of the afternoon and forget to clean the window. Because can you see the drops?
Right.
That's not a good customer experience. You know, small things like that. And then, you know, he was maybe having a meeting with the mayor of the city, and he would call me and say, why don't you come? And I didn't know who was in the room, so I would arrive like with my tie, but forgetting the jacket,
yep,
or the blazer. And he would look at me and say, you should probably get your blazer, right?
So he was a teacher.
A teacher, a coach, a father, a brother, everything at the same time. So in that case, that was exactly what I needed in that moment of my life. And he had so much influence on me. And I you know, I still remember a lot that guy.
What do you hope that people say about... I did ask this question to another leader. What do you hope that people say about you...
When I'm not in the room.
When you're not in the room. Have you seen that episode? Yeah. What do you hope?
Respectfully challenging the status quo. That's something I'd love to hear about me. I don't like the idea of just accepting the status quo. Otherwise, you know, you don't need a CEO. You don't need someone who comes with a different vision, right? You wouldn't hire a CEO. I mean, in some cases, yes, but that's not what the kind of CEO I am. At the same time, I don't believe in the let's break everything overnight philosophy. I've learned that companies need time to change, and people are risk averse, and we know the story. So in very few circumstances, you have the luxury of go there and break everything overnight. So respectfully challenging tradition is something that I really like.
Okay. And let me ask you this as a final question then. What's the best piece of leadership advice you've ever given or received?
Probably what I've said before. There is no reason to hire someone who is smarter than you and tell them what to do. I think this is the best piece of advice you can get.
And I love that advice, because there is a lot said about the ability or inability of leaders to lead experts.
Yeah.
So the Wall Street Journal Future of Everything Festival is being hosted here at your amazing premises. What is your hope for that event? Because I know we're going to have many leaders visiting, keynoting from all over the world. I know it's a great event to have it in, but what do you hope for this two-day event?
So I remember last year, I was here doing the Wall Street Journal Future of Everything, and Michelle Obama was giving a keynote speech.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, if she can, with her words, and this is true this year for every speaker, to have an impact and change the trajectory of life of just one person, something magic is happening. So, you know, it's just one person at the time, if you want. But that idea that you share when you're on a stage, and that is also something that drives me when I'm on a stage, right? If you can share your thoughts, your ideas in a way that is engaging so that you emotionally connect with the audience, but at the same time, you convey the message in such a way that someone clicks and says, I should try to do that. I should pivot. I should change my life. I should embrace that advice. Whatever it is, something magic is happening.
Only takes one person to impact one person. Correct. Listen, you've been an absolute star. Thank you very much for the invite. I'm looking forward to the event. I shall be chaperoning you, for want of a better phrase. And this is a great spot. I think maybe we'll come back. Maybe we'll have another conversation when we hear some of what is going on and some of the technology that's on show. And I know we're going to have some other speakers as well that we're going to bring up, hopefully, to the rooftop.
It'll be a pleasure to host you on the
rooftop. And we can interrogate them as well.
Absolutely.
You've been an absolute superstar.
I'll be in the audience. I'll sit in front of you and listen.
Listen, you've been an absolute superstar allowing us to do this. Thank you so much, Giuseppe, and we will enjoy the event. And then you and I will meet up in London as well.
For sure.
Thank you very much indeed.
Talk soon.
Take care.
Bye.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.